happy Thursday. Woo! It's Thursday one more time. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this fabulous Thursday, whether it's cold where you are, whether it's hot where you are, whether it's raining or snowing or windy, whatever it is happy Thursday. And you know what happens on Thursday. Mm-hmm. That's right. If it's Thursday, it's your girl, Dr. P. And we are on the pod together.
Dr. P on the pod, yeah.
I'm so excited. I want to thank all of you who tarried with us last week for the 33rd National Week of Prayer for the Healing of AIDS. We had a great week of prayer and education. And just because the week of prayer is over, it doesn't mean we're going to stop praying, and it doesn't mean we're going to stop educating, because we must continue to talk about HIV, to give out the facts about HIV. And someone is getting HIV right now because you didn't say something. So we got to say something. Somebody, please say something about HIV and AIDS. You can go back and listen to our podcast from last week. You can go back and listen to all the podcasts. But last week we had Dr. Marsha Martin on, who talked about the global response. And thank God, finally, African-Americans in the United States is a part of the globe. We've been fighting for that realization for over 40 years. So please go back, and not only Dr. Martin, but just go back into our podcast library, and you can really sit and enjoy some of the fantastic guests that come through here every Thursday. But the most important people who come through Thursday is you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for showing up every Thursday, whether you listen on Thursday or Friday or Saturday or Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. Just thank you. Thank you for your support of the podcast and for the bomb in Gilead. Yes, indeed. There indeed is. Thank God. There indeed is a bomb in Gilead. Please go to the website, bombingilead.org. We got a lot of stuff going on, and we do it. We do all this stuff just for you. So if you don't come and participate and partake of it, then what is the point? So I want to encourage all of you, if you have not been to the website in a long while, or if you've never signed up, please go take a minute, take a second, go on your phone, www.bombingilead.org. Okay, don't forget now, you got to do it. We are rolling, we're rolling along. We're really rolling to the 9th Annual Healthy Churches Conference, November 14th through the 17th in November. And you said, well, Dr. P, are you talking about November now? Mm-hmm, got to, because guess what? It's almost April. We are now in the middle of March. We are in the middle of Lenting season, and therefore, the days are longer now. Hallelujah. I just love it when I have more sunshine. And we are coming up on Easter. Yes. So, we got to start talking about the 9th Annual Healthy Churches 2030 Conference. But before we get to November, we are getting ready for Memory Sunday, the second Sunday in June. So if you're not familiar with Memory Sunday, that's when we are asking all of our congregations and families to join us to talk about Alzheimer's. This is a major, another epidemic among Black families is Alzheimer's. And we're going to be talking about Alzheimer's and cognitive health and caregiving. And we have a special, we're working on something so special. I'm not even going to tell you. It is so special. so special. But I want you to schedule your, put on your calendar, Memory Sunday, second Sunday in June. I want you to do it now, all day, especially in the afternoon. We are working on something very special for you. And I'm not going to tell you today what it is. Okay. All right. You know, I'm going to jump out and jump back in because we have a very special guest today. We're talking about Women's History Month. March is Women's History Month, and it's all about women empowerment. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, every day is Women's History Day and month, and every day is Black History Day and month. Why? You know why. That's exactly why. But we are excited to have our sister, Dr. Zelix Rivera. I hope I got that name right. Oh my God. I hope I got it right. Oh my goodness. You know, I hope I got it right. Family, it's Dr. P on the pod. Guess what? And it's Thursday. Dr. Zelix Rivera is our guest today. And remember, we're talking about Women's History Month. Don't forget that now. Ah, we got something for you. Dr. Zelix is the founder of I Am She Women Empowerment Organization. That's it. The mission of hashtag I Am She, S-H-E, is to provide a holistic approach and mentorship to bring women and girls together in an effort to build positivity and strength. And she is the AME Zion, Eastern Regional Chair for Christian Education. I tell you, you know I love those Zions. Dr. Zelix, how are you? Welcome to the pod.
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Tell us all about what you do. I don't know whether you want to start with the Bronx Parenting Housing Network or I Am She Women Empowerment Organization. You know, you are all that woman is. You know that. You are all that woman is. So you just go ahead and have your way. Tell us where you want to start talking about women.
Well, you know, my main focus is I do work in homeless facilities or homeless shelters. I currently oversee 15 shelters here in New York City. I've been in homeless services for 13 years now, believe it or not. I've bounced back and forth between drug rehabilitation centers to the homeless population. And honestly, the homeless population is my passion. My mother likes to call it my ministry. She is a pastor. However, I get really passionate about vulnerable populations, especially when they're not treated correctly. But outside of that, and I think this does tie into the whole I Am She Foundation, but I Am She was designed to promote the advancement of minority women and girls. I do think that there's so much power that is not utilized in sisterhood, especially amongst minority women, that if we would just come together and band together, that we would see it overflow in our upcoming generation. So that is what I Am She came from. And yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, a regular degular girl from the Bronx.
I love it. Before we go to your regular girl from the Bronx, let's talk a little bit more. I want to hear a little bit more about, since you've been in homeless services for 13 years, tell us, what have you seen over the years? Have you seen things get better? Have you seen an increase in homelessness? What are some of the things that you can point out, either going in the better direction or the not so better direction?
I think it's one of those things that sometimes it's stable. I think it depends on the category of homelessness we're talking about. I think the only time that a real And I mean, I call it a reel because it only lasted a temporary time. But the only time that I saw a major improvement in services and outcomes was actually during COVID. Believe it or not, COVID almost banned everybody in an empathetic state where additional services were provided. You know, people were taken off of the street. They were given additional services. Granted, that grace period has expired. And it has returned some of those people either to the streets or to shelters. But during that period, you did see a lot of people with the level of care and concern for the homeless population.
Isn't that just ridiculous that we can find the funding through a pandemic to bring people and give them adequate services? But when we think the pandemic is kind of, you know, filtering, okay, well, go back to your tough life, you know?
Yeah.
That is absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I don't know. What can we do? What can we do about it? We can call our Congress people and be vocal about it. But that is it's amazing what we can find funding for and when we can find funding for it. You know, right. I must say that I just got my taxes back yesterday and I owe taxes, you know, and, you know, it would be great if I thought my taxes was going for supporting homeless services. You know what I mean? And it's like the rich don't pay no taxes. I got to pay all the taxes. And then the things that I care about don't get money. But anyway, let me calm myself down. Back to I am she, this little sister from the Bronx. So tell us about why you know, what is the mission and what's your vision for I am she?
You know, honestly, I think I am she for me is allowing women to be in spaces where vulnerability is not a weakness, allowing women to be in spaces where healing actually happens, and allowing women to be in spaces where they don't find the other woman to be in competition with them. I think that subconsciously women, especially minority women, are almost taught in some regard to compete with the next woman in the room, opposed to joining with the other woman in the room to get to the bottom line. Most times this happens more career-wise. One of the reasons I started I Am She was because every time I reached a ceiling glass in my career, it was a Black woman. It was never a Caucasian woman at any point in time. So I started to realize that, you know, we block people from growth, or we block each other from being better versions of themselves because we have something in ourselves that we have not healed from. So I think allowing women to go into these spaces, hopefully, will be a solution to the bigger problem. My goal for I Am She is, I have a couple of them, but two of them I'll talk about is, one, I want to enter the public school system here in New York City. I want to get them early on. You know, substance is something that's not really talked about in women until they're much older. And by that point, I done did a whole bunch of stuff that I probably wasn't supposed to do. So starting with getting mentors at younger ages around middle school and then and coming up, I think is the best bet. Especially for minority women, especially for ones who are living in areas that are underprivileged or in poverty or in projects, things of that nature. And then another goal is to also have smaller retreats for women. I do have a one-day conference every year here in New York, but overall, I do want to have smaller, more intimate settings where actual healing can happen. And the reason for the healing thing, I know I keep talking about it, but the reason for the healing thing is, by trade, I am a licensed mental health counselor. So it's always the core to me and in some of the work that I do.
What you know, let's just kind of dive deep a little bit and talk about, give us from your lens, give us a picture of how are we taught to be competitive with other women?
Yeah, I think
so. Give us a picture on how does that look? How does that look?
It comes in multiple ways. You know, in some regards, we like to label, and when I say label our children, I don't mean in diagnoses, right? I mean that we spend a lot of time putting our children in designer clothes that don't necessarily add to their substance, instead of focusing more on their character. I'm just using it as an example. I'm not coming for anybody who wants to buy their children Gucci. I'm not, that's not what I'm doing. I'm just getting them to understand that as a child develops, right, they will always look at external factors because that's what they saw and that's what they were taught. Versus in those development stages, if they were given more coping skills, right? So whether you had on Gap or whether you had on Gucci, you still had a level of confidence. I think those kind of things are not necessarily still instilled in our children. And even as they get older, you know, in addition to that, society is telling us that we need big butts, little waist, and we need to get it by any means necessary. But at no point is society telling us that we should be smart. You know what I mean? That you can have a big butt and be smart. You know, like, we're no longer pushing these kind of messages that we once used to push. So trying to get back to those eras or being in those arenas where women are pouring into other women so that you're no longer a competition. You know, I've been in spaces where because my hair was real, it was a problem for the other person. I have nothing to do with that. Like, I have nothing to do with your hair not being real. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, but yet I can't move on in my career because of your level of insecurity. So trying to get women to get more strength-based practices in themselves and confidence and self-esteem models.
Wow. You got a big job ahead of you. So tell us about the trainings that you're going to do. Let's dive a little deeper. We got a little bit of time. What will these trainings look like, and how do people, you're going to do something in the school system?
Yeah.
You know, what, tell us a little bit more, give us a more vision, a visual of what this looks like.
So in the mentorship program, we do want to be able to focus more on substance. So going into the public school system, you know, getting to have these tough conversations with women or younger women, young girls, and being able to be a guide. And the reason why I said that is because everybody needs a mentor. A lot of times we are raised to think that we have to be independent. I mean, we do, but to just solely be independent as if you don't need another person. But it was other strong women that kept me up. So pouring into them, we want to launch a reading program. Hopefully in the New York City public school system, it's actually going to be more of a book club, but a woman's book club, getting women to read more books, to focus more on the academia. We hope to launch a book scholarship as well as a scholarship for women that want to go to both undergraduate and advanced education. So we're looking to pour into people's substance as it relates to character, but also as it relates to academia.
Where do you think Black women are in general today? Where do you think we are in terms of the 21st century? Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of where do you see us 10 years from now? And I know that's a loaded question because Black women, we are not monolithic. Man, I'm not even monolithic. You know, I talk about all them girls who live in me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I am not one girl. You don't, when I wake up in the morning, it's like, okay, which girl got the light today? And sometimes I am, you know, I'm being Dr. Seal and Nessa wanna come out. And sometimes Nessa's out and
yeah.
Dr. P wanna come out. And then some of them girls I don't even let out. You know what I mean? I have to suppress them. Because if they got out, there goes my entire career, you know. But you know, where are we just in general? Let's talk about where you are, Black women in the Bronx. You know, I spent 30 years, over 30 years in New York.
Okay.
And I was truly a New York girl. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm from Lincolnville, South Carolina, but for those 30 years, I was truly a New Yorker. I was all over Brooklyn, Manhattan, Bronx, South Bronx, up in Newburgh, up in Scarsdale. I'm telling you, all them girls, they were all over the place. Tell us, what are you seeing about Black women? And let's talk specifically where you are up in the Bronx.
Well, you know, the Bronx is a very diverse borough. So I do live on the north side of the Bronx. So I have, it's more like the West Indian women's side, slightly mixed, opposed to the South Bronx side, which has more Hispanic. I happen to be both, so I could fall into either one of those. Mm-hmm. That's a really loaded question because I think it's multi-layered. I think that we are, you know, according to research, we are advancing universally. You know what I'm saying? We're getting advanced educations. We're getting educations. We're still fighting for equal, you know, pay and things of that nature. But we do have this drive and motivation in us that might not be as comparable to our counterparts. But at the same time, and this might be a whole nother podcast, Dr. P, but there's some layers of it where in some regards, we've become so independent that we're losing our essence in some regards. That's why it's such a loaded question. It's like a catch-22, you know, and that would fall us more into like relationships and things of that nature. You know, we're fighting in the workforce. We're getting up there. We're becoming CEOs and we're becoming vice presidents and we're becoming all of these things. But there's other layers of life that we're not necessarily able to achieve at the same time. And I can only speak from personal experience. The more successful I become, the harder it is to date, you know, and that's just one layer of it. But, you know, it just goes back into I worked on myself, but then there are other people that's not working on their self. So it always becomes a catch-22. So it's such a loaded question. We're making advances here, but the advances here are lowering, you know, stuff that can happen over here.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And, and we must highlight that Black women, we are now the most educated population in the United States. You know, Black women, we are committed to improving ourselves.
Yeah.
But you know, I know I share with you the relationship component, if you will. And I'm not going to, you know, let the mother girls come out here on the mic, but I relate to the higher you go up, the pickings, if you will.
Hello. And they get slim.
They get slim. And the more, you have to have a greater power of discernment, if you will, as well. And you know, I think that for me, and I'm glad you brought this up because I can share that growing up in Lincolnville in the 50s and 60s, and I have a group of friends across the country that even though we met as adults, we had the same mama, if you will.
Okay.
And our mamas, most of our mothers were school teachers.
Okay.
Most of them were in marriages that they did not want to be in anymore. Some of them stayed because they did not believe in divorces. Some mm-hmm. of them did get out their marriage, but they instilled in their children not to need a man for anything.
Yep.
You know, that you had your greatest goal in life was to be independent and
right.
be able to take care of yourself and yep. not to be dependent upon a man.
Yep.
That was the mantra of our mothers, those of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s, for some of us. I'm not talking
Don't worry, about it's still the mantra.
But for me and my girls around the country, that's when we get together, it's like, here we are. And, you know, let me bring a boyfriend home. Oh, my God. It was like the end of the world. You know, yeah. You don't need no boyfriend. You better get in there with them books. You what? I can't let the mother girls come out and tell you some real stories, but you know, and so we grew up with this. Our mothers did not share the relationship component. Uh-huh. They didn't raise us with that component of raising girls was left out.
Yep.
You know, my mother was, she was a girly girl. She always had her makeup on. She had her nails done and all of that. I don't have no nail polish on. She kept all of that from me because she was determined that I was going to become exactly who I am today, this independent Black woman, very successful. So tell me about your experience in that. Because I hear
I had amens.
I hear you.
Yeah, amens. I had a very similar experience. I was raised in a West Indian household. So we was told that, you know, to do it ourselves, like not to wait for anybody, get it done, be as successful, never depend on a man, don't wait for a man, you know, you can do it on your own. Actually, I mean, even having those core values, that's what I like to call them, having those core values, when I got older and in going through counseling, I had to realize some of those were not necessarily good for my overall growth. You know,
that's
you
right,
can't say,
right.
And I hope I help somebody, but you can't say that you want to be a wife and a mother, right? Or just a mother, or, you know, whatever, without including a man. It doesn't align, you know, if that's your choice.
That's
you
right.
know, like it doesn't align. And then you can't put one over the other. And then that pulls us into going biblically about some things. And then I have a whole nother perspective there. But, you know, you can't be so strong that you're by yourself. And that's how we're taught, you know, we're raised that way, to just solely do for yourself, be alone. And it's like, no, it's not even how you were made. If you look at any theory and any concept, any book, right, you were not supposed to be alone. So it's kind of like, why do we keep instilling to where it almost causes a blocker in their brain to stop doing something?
That's right. That's right.
And it's like, they don't even, and then it becomes so embedded in them that they do it without even knowing they do it, you know? And at no point does healing happen. So it goes back to that point, because this is generational things that you're carrying. And I say to my mentees often, don't carry your mother's hurt. Like, you don't have anything to do with your mother's pain. She might be subconsciously passing it to you, but you have to be able to decipher between if this is grandma's pain, your mom's pain, and now you just holding it, or is this your own lived experience? And in order to do that, I do think that mentorship has to happen, because somebody has to guide you through that process to say, that's not even your, like, that person didn't cheat on you. You know what I mean? Like, so it has nothing to do with you. All men are not what happened to your mother or what happened to whoever. So have your own lived experiences and build from there.
That's great. That is absolutely great. And I want to say something else, but I'm not, because I think that is a perfect conclusion, because guess what? We've run out of time. That is a perfect conclusion. Don't carry your mama and your grandmama and your great grandmama and your sister and all them other girls pain in you. I think that's a perfect conclusion. Family, let's hold that right there. And if you have daughters and if you have mamas and whoever you are, let's be reflective today. Let's be reflective today and say, am I carrying somebody else's pain? Ooh, sister girl, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us today and just sharing all that you are and all that you are doing for women empowerment. I want to invite you back on the pod so we can talk some more about this relationship thing.
Oh, that'll be a long one.
We kind of open it up today.
Right?
But, we can go on down the road a little bit.
That's right.
I have to make sure that all these other girls in me don't jump out, you know, because they'll make a mess of things if I let them out. Thank you so much. It's been truly a joy having you on the pod today. Family, thank you for joining us. You know, we're going to be right back here next Thursday. Next Thursday, we're going to be right here. And God bless you. God bless you indeed. God bless you. You know, our word for the day, our word for the month, our word for the year is what? Joy. Oh, joy, abundant joy. I don't care. We are praying for Ukraine. We are praying for all the countries on the globe. We are praying for the planet. We are praying for your family. We are praying for everything and everybody. God's got all of it. God's got all of it. And I want to declare and decree unto you this day that there's joy in the balm in Gilead. God bless you. I'll see you next week if it's Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's your girl, Dr. P, and she is always on the pod.